latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Coming up on 20, it's hour three. Another busy recap day. We literally will keep recapping Derby and Oaks in the weekend through really Friday when we talk to Ed and James and Nick Tamaro and more. Of course, they'll do some draws today, including for the Peter Pan, the traditional prep for the Belmont coming up on Saturday and tomorrow. Steve Askin, talked to Askin actually over an hour this morning, and we hadn't had a chance to talk. Frequently would talk on the way back from Churchill on Sunday, but we didn't, as it happens. So we got it in. I said, okay, I got to go. Getting ready for the show. We'll have the same conversation on Thursday, tomorrow. Much, much more, of course. We're going to talk to Nick Quesada, as promised. We're going to get Nick in here from Slam Dunk Racing. What a cool weekend. Really a cool Saturday, you know, winning both the Señorita at Santa Anita as well as with Beau Recall, winning the Distaff Mile. So we'll talk. I've been wanting to get Nick on for ages. And what else? Who else? We got Rich Eng will be by and more. So right now, though, Jeremy Plonk standing by. Countdown to no crown. And Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah. Well, you know what? Look, we've only had a handful of Triple Crown winners in the last 40 years. So why would this year be any different? Certainly one of the stranger aftermath of the Derby, obviously, in our professional careers. And we move on to the Preakness with what should be, you know, an excellent betting race, but certainly a race that has a different feel to it.
Before we talk what lies ahead, talk about, you know, your view, the way things unfolded, all the different themes that we had talked about as the prep season unwound, and then, you know, one of the major questions, really both of the major questions, as I brought up earlier today, the two of the most difficult horses to evaluate coming into this were going to be Maximum Security and War of Will, and look what happens.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you step up to the plate, you know what the pitcher's going to throw, he throws it, you swing perfectly, and you hit one off the foul pole, and it bounces left instead of right. And to me, that's kind of the way I feel about, you know, this year's Triple Crown Series, because saw the pitch coming, evaluated the series throughout the course of the year, I think, spot on. One of the best years, I think, in Countdown to the Crown for our scouting report. Had the race down to Maximum Security and Roadster. When it came up wet, it became a situation where, you know, Maximum Security, clearly the horse to beat. Every single wager I made on the Derby had Maximum Security on top. Not a nickel on another single horse. The key long shot was Country House. We've been saying it since his maiden win. We loved the maiden win despite the terrible speed figure. And he proved over the time that 3-4 preps can still get it done to the Derby. You know, this era of let's run in October or the first week of November in the Breeders' Cup, take 4 months off and run one race in March, one race in April. Basically, your whole 3-year-old campaign is 4 or 5 weeks apart, and your only starts in 4 months. And what we've seen is now 3 straight Derby winners who are horses who did not even break their maiden until their 3-year-old seasons, which we, you know, we had to go back to Monarcos. And before Monarcos, you had to go back a long ways before you had a 3-year-old maiden breaker win the Derby. Now we've had 3 in a row. And what that's caused is these horses are breaking their maidens at 3. They've got to run 3 preps, you know. They're running the maiden and then 2 stakes. So for the last 3 years, we've seen horses break their maiden too late, run in 3 prep races, and win the Kentucky Derby. And so the evaluation process was perfect. The right long shot play in the race. To me, there were 2 long shot plays in the race, period. There was War of Will and there was Country House. To me, those were the 2 long shot plays. Used them all heavily underneath Maximum Security, and when they hit the wire, I was as happy as I've ever been watching a Kentucky Derby in my life. 22 minutes later, I was as sick as I've ever been in my life watching a horse race. Just from a personal betting standpoint, it would have been the biggest score in the history of my betting career, and it got taken down. So I'm a disappointed Derby goer for 2019, and you know, the decision for me, I can't really give an unbiased opinion on what should or shouldn't have happened because I'm tremendously biased on it. But from an evaluation process, I feel great that everything we thought about this year, we said that the Bafferts were good but not great. You could almost count on 2 or 3 of them to be in the superfecta, top 5, and they ran exactly like that, good but not great. And, you know, with some excuses. But if you said, well, Game Winner was wide the whole way, if you watched any of his races, he's been wide and unable to keep from being wide in all of his races. You know, he doesn't have that push-button acceleration that you see with a lot of brilliant Bafferts, and that's therefore you end up wide in those kind of situations a lot. So he overcame a lot, too. Game Winner ran a really nice Derby. I think Roadster took him out at the start, which is, you know, one of those shame things that you've got 3 horses in the Derby for Bob, and we'd all like to have that problem. But when 2 of them break next to each other, they have a chance to either both get away good or both get away terribly, you know, when they're in the stall next to each other. And Roadster took the left-hand turn coming out of the gate and really wiped out Game Winner. But Game Winner ran a really good race. You know, can't knock him, but he's run 3 really good races without a victory since the Breeders' Cup, you know, and that's kind of where he is. So these horses all kind of ran the way they would, and if War of Will got back to his Le Comp Risen Star form, he was absolutely a threat in this race, and he absolutely ran like a threat in the race. So again, the evaluation process, it doesn't look, I'm not bragging that this happens all year, you know, or every year. We've done Countdown to the Crown for 14 years. There have been some years I've been so baffled with the crop that I end up with a maiden in the Derby, taking Sonneteer a couple years ago. So it doesn't always come together. You don't always see that fastball coming and the pitcher throw it right where you thought he would. This was the case, and we hit a 450 home run it just bounced off the foul pole. I mean, that's the way I have to look at this year. It just everything worked out right, and still nothing to show for it from a wagering standpoint. It's the way it goes.
No, it's a good attitude, and it's one of the things we've been saying to people that, you know, that we deal with this on a daily basis. If you play the game, you know, seriously or even casually, there isn't anybody who hasn't been DQ'd, and in some cases DQ'd for, you know, for big numbers. We heard
but
Rick Roth.
But nobody's been DQ'd in the Kentucky Derby. That we will say, right?
That's fair.
Has been DQ'd. And I will say this, I was pissed off and suicidal for about 48 hours, and I'm still not happy about it. So, like,
sure.
You know, I don't want to give this, hey, we all fight another day, it's happened to all of us. Nothing even close to that's ever happened to me. Nothing even close. You know, I mean, it's just, and nothing that close has happened to any owner in the game. So anybody who is, like, going on this, I can't believe Gary West is out there, you know, fighting tooth and nail to try to get decision overturned or trying to pull any string. Nobody's ever been DQ'd in the Kentucky Derby before. Put yourself in his position, and what would you think? This isn't a sour loser. A sour loser is somebody who runs second or third and says, I would have won if this hadn't happened. This guy won and had it taken away. That's a completely different mental attitude, and that's a completely different justification. You know, it's not sour grapes. He feels that he was egregiously taken the wrong direction. Therefore, I think he has a case. I don't think he wins a case. Obviously, I don't think there's any legal justification for it, all those things. But I see why he feels the way that he feels. And so I don't have any problem with him. You know, like I said, you know, I'm pissed and suicidal. Not suicidal, of course, but you know what I mean. I mean, just, you know, angered by it and depressed by it and things like that for a few days after the fact. And I didn't own the horse, you know. I was happy as hell, and I didn't even exactly know what the tickets were going to pay. I knew what the exactas were paying, and I had a lot of them, and I was very happy about that. And I knew the tries were going to be a pretty good factor of that with a 14-to-1 shot in the third spot, you know. So you know about what you're in for, and I'm in for five figures, and I'm thinking this is, you know, fantastic, and this is unbelievable, and everybody I know is texting me. It's funny because, you know, you get those once-a-year people who text you, right, or call you. You know, if you're in the horse racing industry, we all know this, and even just as fans, not people who work in the industry, who's your Derby pick? Who do I bet in the Derby? I can't tell you how many 27s or 720s I told people to bet. You know, Every single person I know was bet 720. And my joke with my friends growing up, and there's a big group text of us, about eight of us who grew up together, and they know I'm in the industry. Who do you like? And I said, if I run 720, I'm going to retire to the Cayman Islands and open a Waffle House down there. You know, I was like, that was my joke going into the race. Well, of course, they're all watching the one race of the year. They hit the wire 720, and your phone lights up. You know, everybody's like, holy cow, we got it, we got it, we got it. And then, you know, boom, 20 minutes later, you don't got it. So that's just the way it goes. And so when you talk about how does it affect, you know, newbies to the industry, the once-a-year viewers, they don't understand it. They don't understand it. Yeah. You know, the call doesn't make a lot of sense to them. You know, you see some interference. You see some bumping. You know, Randy and Jerry on TV, their initial reaction was they're not going to take this down. You know, the first of the 22 minutes of the inquiry, I would say the first 17, 18 of them on NBC, if you're watching the show, didn't give you any impression that it was coming down. So, you know, it was a shock to people and who don't know the game. And it's a shock to people who do know the game. I mean, I had people who are seasoned friends and industry people texting me while it's going on. You got nothing to worry about. It's the Derby. Horses don't come down in the Derby, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly.
And so it was a tale of 22 minutes. You know what I mean? I can't say it was a tale of 2 days. You know, it was a tale of 22 minutes. The highs of the highs and the bummers of the bummers. I mean, you know, but look, was there a foul committed? Yes. You know, I mean, do I know for sure? I mean, looking at the different camera angles and things like that, did Warwick Will run up on him first and then that caused things? I've watched the replay because I do the all 20 horses trip notes for Countdown to the Crown. I watch each horse 4 or 5 times minimum. So that puts you at 100 views of the replay right there. And then on top of how many more times looking at the turn. I've looked at the turn probably between 100 and 150 times, I would say. You know, there's stuff that goes on. You know, there's stuff that obviously went on How much did it affect the order of finish? I don't know, you know. War of Will recovered quickly within a stride. He was back on complete even terms, four across the track at the quarter pole, and seven horses passed him the final quarter mile. So did it affect the order of finish? That's a lot of speculation if it did. The other two horses impacted by it were, 70-1 shots, 60-1 type shots that were, probably not getting anything anyway in Long Range Toddy and Bodie Express. So would you have taken them down just for those two horses? Probably not. It's a tough call. I mean, I can see how it happened, but I could also see a solid case for not making the change too. I do think two things were at play though, for sure. And I wrote about this at ExpressBet in the free blog on Monday. I do think the trainer matters, the connections matter. I think if Suge wins the race, if Mott wins the race, they have a lot harder time taking him down to Jason Service. I think that's realistic. It sounds like you're making a nefarious accusation at the stewards, but look, judges matter, Draymond Green looks at a referee with an evil eye, and he gets a technical foul, and Steph Curry can look at a referee and show them up and not get a technical foul. The people involved in decision-making matter. And the other thing I think that really matters is this was the safe call in the light of being safe, in the safety era. With the horse death at Santa Anita, you can't pass judgment on the Derby and say, boys will be boys, let them play. It's rough and tumble. The Derby's a rodeo. Live with it, snowflake. This is the way that it goes. You can't do that right now. So it was the wrong incident at the wrong time. If this same incident happens a year ago, I don't think the horse comes down. I think they leave 144 years of Derby tradition up, and the horse stands. I could be wrong on that. Those are assumptions, and we don't know that. But there's no hard, fast rule, on what has to happen in these situations. They still have to think that it affected the order of finish. The other thing that's difficult with the order of finish is War of Will finished out of the Super High Five, and even with the DQ did not get into the Super High Five. So no horse impacted whatsoever moving up would affect any wager. And I am one person who has, over the years, very much advocated for if the fourth-place finisher got fouled, he's not going to be promoted to the win, but there are a lot of trifecta bettors. There are a lot of show bettors. You got to protect the wager in public. Moving these horses to positions that they did not impact one single wager positively on any of the horses who were impacted. If War of Will runs sixth and they're offering super high five wagering, then you have to protect the public all the way down to the fifth position. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But he didn't run sixth, If he ran sixth, I would have a lot more positive towards the takedown, because I think the super high five bettor has to be protected. He's as important as anybody else. Every dollar wager in that race. So if you're going to offer a top eight, then you got to protect everybody who runs in the top eight. And so that's where I think the difference is. War of Will runs fourth or fifth in that race, even though it may not affect win play show bettors. It affects superfecta bettors, super high five bettors. I think then you're required to protect the betting public. But what did this DQ do to the betting public at all? It didn't positively affect the betting public one single bit. It made zero change except a negative change. It took a 9-2 shot down that had, $6 million or whatever it was bet on him to win, and promoted a 65-1 shot that few people had. So it actually was a negative towards the betting public. This was a decision that went completely against the betting public and erred on the side of the safety public. So I think the decision quenches the thirst of the general public, but for the betting public it went the opposite direction. And I kind of think that's the way they leaned here.
Good take, Jeremy. Well done, given how much time we spent and the way we tracked it and the way our opinions of the Derby horses has a tendency to morph, evaluating the races that make up the prep scheme. Well, now we have to turn our attention toward Baltimore, and there is news this morning, and there's even some follow-up to what I mentioned this morning. And in fact, as I suggested, Win-Win-Win will participate, and now Mr. Money is going to demur. So you can sub in the very local. You'll now have two Maryland horses, one a Maryland bred and one Maryland based, and you have a trainer that, in addition to Baffert having won the Preakness seven times, you're going to have somebody that was second in the Preakness once. As I said to Trombetta yesterday, there's no Bernardinis in here. Sweet Northern Saint, a second. It's one of my favorite quotes ever. When DeSormo came back on Sweet Northern Saint, and Mike said, you know, what happened out there? He says, I don't know. I just felt a breeze go by.
You know, Bernard- And Bernardini was the second best 3-year-old in that race. You know, I mean, the great Barbaro. So what a 2006 Preakness that was. Because, you know, before, it was kind of like the Holy Bull cigar transfer of power, right? When Holy Bull, you know, pulled up in the Don, it was like the beginning of the big cigar run, you know, and Bernardini in that same situation is, we didn't know how good Cigar was until the aftermath of the Holy Bull thing. Holy Bull was the featured horse that year in the Don. And so, you know, the same way with Bernardini, we didn't know how great of a horse he was at that point. All eyes were on Barbaro at that time. And, you know, it's kind of funny how this game will do that over time of, you know, one passes the baton to another oftentimes. And, you know, well, what are we going to end up with? You know, what are we going to end up with in this Derby or in this Preakness? It'll be interesting, you know, because who knows? Who knows what kind of performance lies in the weeds? You know, it's there's always something around the next corner in this game, and it may not be what you expect. This obviously isn't what we expect with the Derby 1-2-3s not back. You know, I will say this though. I mean, and everybody can, you know, everybody can kind of look at the Derby result in hindsight now and say, you know, well, I didn't want that horse to win, so I'm glad that he didn't, or whatever. But if Service is back and Maximum Security is in the Preakness, what is he? 3-5?
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, he is such a standout, and he ran one of the most impressive derbies we have seen. You know, one of the fastest final first quarters in the history of the Derby, I believe would have been among the very fastest, if not the fastest, of a Derby winner the opening quarter. He ran the last quarter mile of the race 5-6 lengths faster than Justifying American Pharoah did the final quarter. And this is after the incident and all the other stuff that goes on. Phenomenal performance. Galloped out much the best. I mean, this was a great Kentucky Derby effort that is completely, you know, lost and forgotten. And if the drift doesn't happen, I'm sorry, they don't touch him in the stretch. You know, War of Will got passed by 7 horses the last quarter mile. Country House had a full quarter mile of momentum to get him. I mean, if he doesn't drift out at that point and cause that incident, he wires the Derby. And we haven't had very many wire-to-wire Derby winners, right? I mean, a wire-to-wire Derby winner is quite memorable. So this was a tremendous performance. Say what you want about Jason Service, like him, dislike him. More dislike him than like him, that's obvious. There hasn't been any real sympathy or olive branches extended to him, like people saying, you know, what a shame he had this horse ready to go on the biggest day of his life. And, you know, it's a shame that it worked out that way. People don't like him. I get that, you know. It's the difference between Roger Clemens and Andy Pettit. I've said that many times when we talk about medication violators and things like that in horse racing. Is, you know, people hated Roger Clemens, so he was a bad guy for steroids. They loved Andy Pettit, and it was okay with Andy Pettit because he did it to help recover his arm and to be able to make more starts. You know, but Roger Clemens was trying to cheat. Well, one guy's an ass, and the other guy's loved, and the ass gets treated differently than the loved person, you know? Brady Anderson, Barry Bonds, you can make the comparisons over the years. People don't like Jason Service. That's just the bottom line. They don't like his win percentage. And so, therefore, the aftermath of this Derby was treated a little different. Not necessarily the decision from the stewards, but I think the public reaction to it. I mean, if a beloved figure was DQ'd, out of the top spot, there'd be candlelight vigils for him right now in the racing industry. I mean, everybody would be like, oh, what a shame, you know. Bill Mott, for instance, just put it on the other foot. You know, Bill has gone his whole career. He had it all. He was the Derby champion for 22 minutes. It must be heartbreaking for him. But you don't hear any of that for Service. So I get it. I mean, that's part of it. You've got to separate yourself, I think, from the emotion sometimes and what your preconceived notions are. But it's definitely part of the last few days. I think that's undisputable.
Well, let's give everybody what this field is morphed to. in the last, literally in the last 23 and a half hours. It was noon yesterday that the Country House news came to pass. But right now, your leading candidates, obviously, War of Will and Improbable. Win-win-win coming out of Derby so far. So three Derby exiters. Then Laughing Fox, Another Twist of Fate, Owen Dale, Always Mining, Signalman, and Bourbon War, and we're waiting on Bodie Express, could be another Derby exiter. That would be 10, and I won't be surprised. I don't think anybody will be surprised that between now and the weekend, another name or two bubbles to the surface.
Yeah, I've been waiting to see Always Mining against this level of horses since the private terms. You know, his couple one-turn races where he got really good at Laurel were fantastic, and I thought, what's going to happen in the private terms when he goes around two turns? That was kind of like Still Having Fun last year, where he was the key horse in the winter in Maryland until they went two turns, and then the wheels kind of came off, and you realized he was a sprinter. Always Mining ran even better going long, and then he went into Tessio to mount an eighth and ran even better going longer. I think he's phenomenally good right now. And I said this in Countdown to the Crown a month or so ago. I wish he would have went in the Wood Memorial. I would have bet everything I had on him in the Wood Memorial to win that race. I think he would have crushed him in the Wood as that race turned out in 150-something. I think he's that good. Now you don't have Maximum Security, who's the speed. This horse is a really good front runner, showed a tracking gear. I think Always Mining is really, really good. And I think the Derby horses that go to face him are going to find out. I think he's going to be an awful tough out. I've got to see everything that shows up, where the other speed is, that sort of deal. But when you talk about like Bourbon War, you talk about Win, Win, Win. So Signal Man, think of the new shooters are in here. They're closers. You know, who's going to go with him? Who's part of the speed? You know, War of Will probably be up in the mix, obviously, and try to track him. But this horse is talented. I'm telling you, he is really good. He's running sub 24 fourth quarters around two turns. He's coming home in 12 and change at a mile and an eighth. Kelly Rubley has Always Mining as sharp as any horse I've seen coming out of Maryland since private terms. That takes it back to, what, 1988, when he was the favorite over winning colors in the Derby. This horse is good, Steve. He's going to make him run. I don't care what the figures say. I know he's only buying in the 90s, but, you know, there's not a bunch of horses in here throwing up 110, so even if you subscribe to the numbers, he's not overmatched, and he is good. Now, can he take that Laurel form to Pimlico? That's an interesting question. He is a Maryland horse. He is a local, but he'll be as unfamiliar with the Pimlico surface as the rest of them. So it doesn't always translate. You know, people have been betting Maryland for decades. You know, there were Bowie horses, there were Laurel horses, there were Pimlico horses who ran better over the course of the three. And, you know, a lot of times people talk about the tight turns at Pimlico and stuff like that. Some of that was based on the other circuits in Maryland, you know, that, yeah, it's not different than Churchill, but it was tighter than Laurel, you know, and things like that. So some of that talk is circuit-based, and the three tracks, now down to two, obviously, and maybe turn down to one, play differently. You know, Laurel's a different mile and an eighth oval and you know, a big round racetrack, and Pimlico's different. So we'll see how he handles it.
Well, I can tell you that Trombetta fears and respects Always Mining as much as anything that is going to, you know, roll in here from out of the Derby.
And I like that, because I like when other trainers are willing to tell you other horses in the race are good. One of the great tells on Maximum Security is how much Bob Baffert was talking about him as the horse to beat
absolutely.
For 6-7 weeks. You know, that's the horse you've got to fear. That's the horse you've got to fear.
Yep.
I'd listen to those sort of things. I always did that. I haven't been on the Derby Notes team for the last couple of years, but I did it for 13, 14, 15 years. And one of the great things about being on that is you're walking around the stable area, you're one of the pool reporters getting all the notes for everybody, is you run into all the other trainers, right? If you're going into Dale Roman's barn, you also see Bernie Flint on the other side or somebody else, you know? So you stop and talk to those guys. And I used to always talk to Bob Holtis and Steve Asmussen before he had horses in the Derby every year, and Bernie Flint and guys like that. I used to always walk around and ask them their opinion, because who is the horse? You know, and those were some of the most valued people I've talked to every single year walking around to see what they thought. And they tell you, you know, who's coming out of New Orleans? Ah, they're not that good this year. You know, Bernie would tell you what New Orleans was like, and Holtis would tell me what was coming out of Oaklawn and what he thought of those, you know. And I think that's important, to hear people talk about other people's horses, because, you know, when they just don't give you the platitudes about their own, and they talk about somebody else's, I think it's worth listening to. So I like hearing that Trombetta has such respect for Always Mining. I think that's a feather in that horse's cap. And go back and watch replays. That's all I got to say. If all you do is look at the past performances and say, oh, he's always done his run out wins. You know, look, a lot of people thought win was, you know, really one of the horses in this crop who was coming along to be one of the tops. And in the Heff Stakes at Laurel last year, Always Mining handled him easily. You know, he's a talented horse. What a shame it was, not a shame per se, but, you know, we talked about, Jim, you and I talked about this, I think, on your show not too long ago, but, you know, Jim McInvale's due some good luck in this game, you know, and for all the great things he's done as a humanitarian in recent years and stuff like that, and certainly he had Run Happy, but Jim McInvale was the original owner of Always Mining. You know, this horse was sold after he went to Laurel and won there in the Lounge Company, Ethan, because he was a Maryland bred. They took him up there. And it was sold and then got really good under Kelly Ruby's care. But it'd be nice to see McInvale in one of these kind of races. And I know that they got with the house for the sale and everything like that. But it'd be pretty cool to see him with a horse of this repute. Because I honestly think, I mean, again, I haven't handicapped the whole race. We don't know who's in it yet and everything like that. But if post time's in 5 minutes, I'm telling you what, my money's on Always Mining. I'm not even thinking.
I can't argue. We've talked to Kelly along the way, and I've got to turn in the Express Bet Preakness wagering guide entry later today, and he's certainly going to be in the selections. Seth Merrow standing by with us too, and Jeremy, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you from Baltimore next week.
All right, go get him, Seth.
Look forward to a quick hit here with Seth. I was supposed to be, we were supposed to digest the weekend on Sunday and had a little bit of a hiccup, but we did get in a little bit of a Capital OTB summary show, I guess. I haven't looked at the listings to see if it, you know, if I could watch it myself.
It was on yesterday, Monday and Tuesday morning, and the folks go to the YouTube channel, the Capital OTB YouTube channel, to pull it up. It was you, had John White on, because, of course, he's been in the Stewart's booth during his career, and we talked to Richard Migliore as well, who's written in 5 derbies. So we got some opinions on the DQ and then talked a little bit overall derby weekend with you. But, yeah, folks can find it on the YouTube channel.
Excellent. Well, Seth, let's digest this. You've been obviously combing all of the news and all of the everything that's being written and talked about for Equidaily for the website. And usually you put up those headlines that are fun and pithy. In this case, it's just been an onslaught of analysis and consternation.
Yeah, and the disappointing part was there's a lot of headlines out there that horse racing black guy and takes a real knock, and then you take a closer look at it, and it's, yeah, exactly. It's written by somebody who is a sports writer but clearly doesn't follow horse racing, and they've just put something into the story that's not there. I mean, this is it's a story, it's a news story, but it's not any kind of a knock or a black guy on horse racing. You know, my take was, I was like everybody else. When we first looked at it, you thought nothing's going to happen. The more you looked at it, I think you had to kind of feel like the horse has to come down, given the rules. And I think that's the thing. The rules are the rules, and if you read the rules, Andy Beyer had a column out where he said the DQ was the wrong decision.
He said it on the show Monday. We started the week with Andy on Monday.
Yeah, and I get it, and I get what Jeremy, you know, why he's upset. Before the 30 minutes before the Derby, I looked up at the odds board and said this is crazy. That, you know, of course, the horse like Country House, and there were a couple others in there that were good horses that were crazy odds. So I put together a dollar exacta box with 8 horses, just thinking something crazy, because I like spinoff at a big price. And so before the DQ, I had the exacta. So I get it that folks are kind of kicking themselves, and there are reasons they can feel like, you know, it shouldn't have come down. Beyer's case was it didn't really, well, like Jeremy was saying, it didn't affect really the betting situation. And he said War of Will winds up 8. but he wasn't going to be much better than that. But Beyer then goes on to say he finished eighth. He could have been maybe as good as fifth. Well, okay, fifth was worth $90,000 to the owner. So, you know, if you're looking at the race and saying, gee, it affected the finish, and that, those are the rules. The rules are if it alters the finish of the race. And if you're saying it altered the finish enough that a horse missed a money position, then I think you're making the argument that they had to make the case. Now, that said, I mean, I think we're all now sitting back and thinking, should the rules be tweaked? I don't know how they would be tweaked. But if, you know, Jeremy's talking about if it affects a betting position, maybe that's what they look at. Maybe they consider that in the future. I think there are unintended consequences if you do those kind of things. But I think in this situation, the decision had to be made, but I'm as conflicted as everybody else. I think we're also invested in this. Had this happened on a Thursday afternoon, yeah, people may have complained, but by Friday morning, you've moved on. But the Derby, we all start looking at it, you know, in January or before, and we're looking at the prep races, and we're talking about it. And then the post positions are drawn on Tuesday, and the PPs come out, and we start handicapping the race on Tuesday. And then when you see a performance like that, and you start to think undefeated and a chance to go on and maybe be an undefeated Triple Crown winner, and we all, if you're a real fan of the game, are invested in that at that level, and you just feel like, oh, it was just unsatisfying the way it played out. So I think it's just bigger and more emotional, as it should be, that it's the Derby. But ultimately, I think they made the right decision. But as I say, to read some of the stories by people who just find it, and they admit in the first paragraph, I don't follow horse racing, but I do watch the Derby. And then they used what happened last weekend to take a shot at horse racing. That was a little bit disappointing after the weekend.
Well, it's that's the go-to. That's the predictable response, when in fact I said this to you, I think, on Sunday, that we deal with this constantly, so it's just that much more magnified, and obviously there's a greater significance to what this race means. We're watching the Preakness field morph, and we'll worry about that next week, Seth, when we talk. We got about 6-7 minutes. What other weekend activity from Churchill struck you? How'd you make out overall?
Like I said, I would have that Derby exact would have helped a little bit, but Friday I did pretty well. I like She's a Julie, and that helped Friday's action, and then I came to Saturday. Saturday was just a funny day to kind of string them together. I was saying all day, as I was on TV the early part of the day, if you're making the right decision, you're getting paid, and you're going to have the opportunity to do that. That certainly became obvious in the Kentucky Derby. But Saturday I was kind of hit and miss mostly. So Friday was the day that was a little more impressive for me betting-wise. But it was two great days of stakes racing. I mean, World of Trouble looked great. And after World of Trouble won on Friday, I came on television Saturday morning and I said, put his name firmly on the ballot for an Eclipse Award. But I said, watch out, we'll see what Mottoli has to say later this afternoon. And Mottoli then looked great on Saturday afternoon. So those two were certainly impressive. Serengeti Empress on the rebound in the Kentucky Oaks was very good. I just thought, as I say, Mia Mischief was a horse that I liked. Oh, and I should say, speaking of Mia Mischief, one of the notes that I made as the day progressed, an angle that I have liked for years now. Last year it didn't work out quite as well, but I think it's rebounded given what we saw Friday and Saturday down at Churchill. This time of year, and now we're going to see a lot more of it as Oaklawn closed on Saturday, but this time of year I typically like the Oaklawn shippers when they go to other tracks. Seems like the Oaklawn strip maybe gives them an added level of fitness. Whatever it is, over the past years, I've paid attention to the Oaklawn shippers as they have moved on to other venues around this time of year. Well, Friday and Saturday at Churchill, there were 10 horses that won their last race at Oaklawn that won races on set. 27 races Friday and Saturday, 10 had last raced at Oaklawn, the winners. And there were good prices, including Country House, the winner of the Derby. But then you had a $40 winner on Friday. You had a couple of $25 winners on Saturday's card as well. And that's what I've liked about these Oaklawn shippers. They go to other venues, and they can be a little bit overlooked and get through at a price. So, again, that was just validated on Friday and Saturday. So to alert people to kind of keep your eyes open for that angle. Now with Oaklawn closing, you'll see a lot more of those horses moving on to other racetracks. So keep that in mind as the next 4 to 6 weeks, I think the angle might play out.
Yeah, and in fact, somebody on Twitter, I think on Saturday night, as we were driving toward Central Ohio, somebody said, look at all the Oaklawn shippers that won. And of course, Oaklawn with this extended meet, we haven't heard the final numbers. I mentioned yesterday with Steve Asmussen, of course, Laughing Fox's win. I'll also mention that Wade Catalano sent out Jerry Karam's Arkansas, but they were all Arkansas breds. You had that Arkansas Breeders' Championship, $200,000 stake on that card. Hunani Road, the 4-year-old at 4-5, the Jonesboro gelding, the winner. Let me so wanted to slip that in. That's been sitting here, and I got to check with Burl McBride, who we talked to after the Rainbow, because he tried to stretch Tappet Star out, and he chased the pace, and then kind of abruptly stopped and kind of eased, more or less. And I hope he's okay. I want to see if maybe it was just the distance. And we talked yesterday with Andy about all the Belmont action, Santa Monica in the Sheepshead Bay, and
I'll talk about one that people should may have gone under the radar because of the big weekend, but people should doubt the Pink Lloyd got back on the winning track.
Yeah, mentioned yesterday.
Up at Woodbine, got back into the winner's circle, so that was nice to see.
It was. I talked to, in fact, when Cassie was on yesterday at the end of the show, and I was sort of waiting to have Mark on, and I threw that one in because, of course, he kind of had tailed off at the end of the year last year. And the other story, we got to get Carlos Martin on because the emergence of Come Dancing.
Absolutely.
Holy cow. Just great. And our friends as well. The Friedbergs, along with the Goichmans. Nicodemus, they've been very patient after acquiring him in the bloodstock sale, and a little bit of a hiccup, and now here he comes and rewards them with the Westchester. So racing does not live by Derby Oaks alone, as we say.
Yeah, we move on. And, again, I could have made the case either way, and you go back to that Bayern non-DQ in the Breeders' Cup, and the brouhaha was, I don't know, just as big, but it was pretty big in the racing world, and now, it has gone into the rearview mirror and gets pulled up in situations like this, and I think that'll eventually be the same thing with the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's big news now, but I think, it'll fade into, not obscurity necessarily, but it'll be brought up every year, Kentucky Derby time probably. Certainly if there's another inquiry or objection, will become right to the forefront, but racing will certainly move on. There's no question about that. In the 2 weeks, the Preakness, and then the Belmont, Saratoga, and Del Mar, we'll just be debating what maximum security can do in the Haskell and the Travers.
Seth Merrow, everybody, EquiDaily.com, capital OTB TV. And more. And we'll talk to Seth next week. And we'll send you out into the Wednesday race day. And want to thank the parade of guests. Pete Fornital started us off with the Kentucky Derby Betting Challenge winner, Rick Broth. Nice roster, actually, of runners-up, too, I should mention, in there. Dave Rink was second, $50,000 plus a BCBC ticket. Dave Kramer, third, $25,000 and BCBC ticket. Jimmy Metzger was fourth. And Rich Averill from Tampa, of course, fifth and a BCBC ticket. So that was your top five. Nick Luck joined us. And Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Tim Layton,
Jeremy Blanc, Countdown to the Crown, HorsePlayerNow.com. Seth Merrill. Enjoy the day, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.